Welcome to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks for listening this week. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, here comes Dorian. You know what we're talking about. The strongest hurricane of the season could become the worst storm to hit Florida's East Coast in nearly a generation. Now, Dorian is still days away, but of course it's expected to slow down and get stronger as it heads across the warm waters of the Atlantic.
So when and where? And how strong? How big? These are all the significant questions all of us in Florida are asking ourselves and others as we wait in those long lines to buy gasoline, water, supplies, as we work to put up storm shutters and just, well, wait too, right? And so with all this uncertainty still out there, the entire state of Florida is under a state of emergency. We're going to be talking about the storm, getting ready for its aftermath, what's changed in how the state and federal governments respond, and what hasn't. We want to hear from you. How are you preparing for this storm? Perhaps you experienced Hurricane Matthew several years ago, or Irma, or Michael. Have you been made whole by your insurance company or FEMA? What was that experience like? How has that changed your preparations for this storm? 305-995-1800. Your phone call's coming up in a moment at 305-995-1800 on Twitter at Florida Roundup.
We have the latest on Dorian right now as we welcome Florida Public Radio Emergency Network meteorologist Ray Hawthorne to the Florida Roundup. Ray, thanks for joining us. We appreciate your time.
You're very welcome, Melissa.
And we're so lucky to have the Florida Public Radio Emergency Network in this state. It is an invaluable resource that works with the state emergency response networks to get vital information out to the whole population of Florida. So what's the latest on the storm? We're hearing from Florida Storms, which you can follow on Twitter, by the way, that it's strengthening. What can you tell us?
Yeah, the storm has been strengthening quite a bit. It started last night in really starting to ramp up. The winds right now, top sustained winds are at 110 miles per hour. Hurricane Hunter aircraft was in there a little bit earlier on this morning. So right now it's a strong Category 2 hurricane on the Saffir-Simpson hurricane wind scale. Another reconnaissance plane is going to be going out there shortly, but I can tell you, looking at satellite imagery right here, the storm looks like it's really starting to ramp up, and I think the next plane that is going out there is going to find a much stronger Dorian.
And as
Ray,
Tom, Tom, you mentioned this could be as strong as Hurricane Andrew, potentially, on the east coast of Florida.
Yeah, so the forecast makes the hurricane a Category 4 hurricane, and I don't want to get too fixated on hurricane categories. This is going to be a major storm, so whether it's a 3 or a 4 or even a 5, the current forecast does have it as a Category 4 hurricane as it approaches the state. Later on this weekend, now it looks like it's going to be coming in a little bit more slowly, but either way, it looks like a Category 4 hurricane is the most likely scenario at this point.
Yeah, and Ray, it's Tom Hudson, the history books will say if it is a 4 that hits the East Coast, it will be the strongest since Hurricane Andrew back in August of 92, which was a 5 when it came ashore in South Dade County. So what about the projected path? I know there's lots of questions. Number one, before we talk about the path, when is that cone going to get narrowed down so we have a little bit more certainty?
Yeah, so the reason why the cone doesn't look like it's getting any thinner is because the storm's arrival is slower. So the storm is slowing down as it approaches the state. In fact, the eye of the hurricane may not make landfall until later on Monday, perhaps. Now, some of the effects will likely come in much sooner than that on Sunday. So that's part of the issue right there. As far as the forecast track, the entire state, really the entire peninsula, is still in the cone of uncertainty. Now, the highest probabilities of tropical storm and hurricane force winds are confined generally along the southeast and east central coast from roughly Miami-Dade County northward into the Space Coast area, with the very highest probabilities at the moment in the Martin, St. Lucie, and Palm Beach County areas. Again, that's going to shift around quite a bit, as you're well aware, Tom, but that's where the most likely area for those winds, heavy rain, storm surge, the whole kit and caboodle would be coming in later on this weekend, particularly coming in late Sunday on into Monday. And with the slow motion of the storm, it could hold on Tuesday and beyond.
That's something that concerns so many people around the state, Ray. What we learned after Hurricane Irma, for example, a couple of years ago, people might think they averted the worst of the storm's effects, but then The way it buzzed up the state left behind a lot of flooding, sometimes catastrophic flooding. And so we simply don't know what's going to happen, but flooding certainly is a concern for many who might not even be in the direct path of the storm.
Yes, flooding is going to be a major concern. Obviously, there are a number of hazards. Along the coast, storm surge is going to be a big deal, and in some places it could exceed 10 feet. Strong, damaging winds, of course, near where the eye makes landfall are going to be a big deal. But with such a slow-moving storm, this could be moving at 4, 5, 6 miles per hour. Mm-hmm. Right now it's moving at about 10 to 12 miles per hour, but it's going to be about half the speed it's moving now. And it's been a wet summer across much of the state. And so with rainfall really lasting a day, 2 days, 3 days in some locations, that could be a major, major story coming up, and people should be aware of that and prepare for it.
Ray, one quick question in regards to that, and then I got another question around the quadrants of the storm. The question around the rain level is, as you mentioned, the modeling seems to be Palm Beach County, Martin County. That takes right near Lake Okeechobee, the big body of water in the middle of the state, which is already at 13.5 feet, a little bit over 13.5 feet, which is kind of in the middle of its range. What kind of water levels, rain levels, are you talking about?
Yeah, so rainfall amounts could easily exceed 10 inches, no doubt about it, in parts of the state. And it could be much more than that, depending on just how slowly this thing is moving across. But 10 inches is certainly certainly a very good possibility.
Quite a bit, yeah. And hurricane vets know it's the northeast quadrant that is kind of the quote-unquote dirty side of the storm. So when you look at that eye, you're talking about that space right now between Palm Beach and the Space Coast that potentially could see that worst piece of the storm, right?
That's how it looks at the moment. We are totally expecting things to shift around a little bit more. It's how these hurricanes tend to work. And as you mentioned a little bit earlier, certainly we have some uncertainty in that regard. But the modeling is trying to narrow things maybe just a little bit today. But yes, that eastern, really that in this case, since the storm will be coming in from the east, it would really be the northern quadrant of the storm is where we'd have the highest surge, heavy rainfall. Isolated tornadoes would be a threat there, too.
Ray Hawthorne, meteorologist with the Florida Public Radio Emergency Network. Ray, we thank you so much for sharing your insights with us and the work of all of your colleagues at Florida Storms. If there's no other source of information, public radio will always be on for everyone. If you don't have any other power, you can always turn on the radio in your car or wherever you can listen to get the work of these great meteorologists. Thank you so much, Ray.
You bet, Tom. You bet, Melissa.
Thank you. We'll go to your calls in a moment. Questions and comments, preparations for Hurricane Dorian, call us wherever you are in the state. 305-995-1800. Tweets to @FloridaRoundup. As we welcome John Kennedy, he's state capitol reporter with Gatehouse Media, joining us from WFSU in Tallahassee. We also have with us Craig Fugate, former administrator with FEMA. John Kennedy, let's begin with you. We heard Governor DeSantis urging the state to prepare, working with emergency response officials. This is his first real test as governor in terms of leading the state through what certainly looks to be another very challenging severe weather event. How prepared is the state and the new administration, do you think, to rise to this challenge?
Well, I did ask him that this morning at a briefing that we had in Tallahassee at the Emergency Operations Center, just about the idea of, you know, how much of a learning curve was there for Governor DeSantis. He, kind of shrugged off some of that and talked about, you know, how he had gone through with emergency managers in the state a couple of dry runs, I guess you'd call it, you know, in advance of storms generally in advance of storm season. So he would kind of make it sound that, you know, he was on top of things fairly quickly. Indeed, the state's emergency operations, the emergency management division is pretty well staffed and pretty familiar with, you know, reacting to this kind of event. So it is a little bit of a, you know, push button operation, I guess, for DeSantis. But I also asked him about the political implications of this for him, because this is sort of, you know, for a lot of Floridians going to be their first real encounter with, you know, how does Governor DeSantis's administration handled, you know, emergency situations, and he also kind of ducked away from that question, but saying, you know, that politics is not really part of it. But undoubtedly, for a new governor, this is going to be an imprint, you know, that people will remember him by.
It's not only Governor DeSantis's first major test as a as the chief executive officer in terms of a hurricane. It's also the first storm for over 300,000 people who have moved to the state since Hurricane Irma, which was just less than 2 years ago. So a lot of new Floridians experiencing this for the first time. Craig Fugate, the former administrator for the Federal Emergency Management Agency in Florida, in Central Florida. You know this state well. How concerned are you about so many new Floridians having to experience such a major storm for their first experience? And what should they know?
Do what their neighbors are doing. And I've been kind of watching what's happened. People are getting water. Generators are being sold out at the big box stores, and the lines at the gas stations are now longer than Starbucks. So people are getting ready. The big thing is pay attention and find out if you're in an evacuation zone, particularly a new resident. And if the evacuation orders are given by local officials, heed them and move to higher ground and don't delay. That's probably the thing we got to keep reinforcing for the new folks are, are you in an evacuation zone? And if you are, when the order's given, you need to evacuate and know where you're going.
Yeah, very good advice. Let me ask you, Craig, as a follow-up to Tom mentioned Hurricane Irma, also Hurricane Michael. The panhandle of the state was battered by Michael. Folks there are still not fully recovered. So many people out there listening to this broadcast right now might still even be waiting on a check from FEMA after these back-to-back hurricanes. How much is that stressing FEMA and emergency management response in the state as we are seeing more severe and more frequent storms battering Florida?
Well, I think most of the stuff that FEMA does has been done on the individual assistance. I don't know of that many people that'd be waiting on a check for FEMA. I know there's still a lot of issues with insurance payouts, and particularly with Michael, you know, the differences between what the flood insurance, if they had that, and their homeowner's policy. But the big thing, I think, again, is let's focus on the first things first. Get ready for this storm. Find out if you're in an evacuation zone and know where you're going if you're going to evacuate. Just don't get on the road and think you're going to figure it out and route. You need to have a destination, particularly if you're looking for hotels and motels. Book now and make sure you have a reservation before you get on the road. But for a lot of folks, you don't have to go hundreds of miles. In most cases, counties will be opening up shelters in their communities outside of the storm surge area. So that's really what we got to focus on now, is getting ready to support any evacuations that may be required.
Craig, what's the triggering mechanism for local officials to begin making those decisions and those public pronouncements in terms of opening up the evacuation shelters, but also instituting the evacuation orders?
Well, there's two things they're going to be looking at. Is how long does it take them to evacuate, and when do they expect the earliest arrival of tropical force winds? And that's the one they're going to look for, and then they count backwards. So if it takes them 24 hours to evacuate that county, then they're looking for when's the earliest they can get tropical force winds, and that's when they need to make a decision, because they don't want people to be on those high rises, you know, coming off the barrier islands on those high bridges in tropical force winds. And so that's what everybody's looking at. As the storm's slowing down, they're actually getting more time. And this isn't much different than 2004 when we had Hurricane Francis barreling through the Bahamas as a major hurricane and literally stall off of Florida's coast for several days. Fortunately, that one weakened. Unfortunately for this hurricane is when the hurricane specialists at the National Hurricane Center are saying they see no indication that this storm will weaken. That's also not good.
John Kennedy, you've been writing about that. The governor has warned everyone that this is a storm that's going to menace the state for several days. That creates a lot of issues, could be different issues for different parts of the state. And gosh, when you, Craig, when you mentioned 2004, that's a year I'll never forget, covering four hurricanes in 1 year, Charlie, Francis, Ivan, and Gene. I'll never forget it. But John Kennedy, this is going to stress the state in a number of ways, as you've been tracking, because it's going to last a while. The National Guard is on high alert. You're already hearing about fuel shortages and other problems, right, John?
Yeah, and this is, you know, well before the storm is anywhere near us right now. So, you know, I think they're also looking at flooding. You know, the storm is likely to bring torrents of rain. And there are certain areas of the state, obviously, that are very low-lying. I know in the Miami area, you know, even today they're squawking about Miami Beach with a king tide in the forecast mm-hmm. as well. You know, that the water is extremely high right now. So I think you're going to see a lot of those kind of issues. And when people can't get gas, when they can't get supplies, and it's, you know, still days away, the level of frustration rises. So I think as the pressure drops out in the you know, southern waters here, I think the pressure rises on Governor DeSantis
That's
and
right.
his administration.
Yeah.
Anxiety level certainly already running high up and down the peninsula. 305-995-1800, your Dorian preparation questions, your concerns, your thoughts here for the state of Florida as we are facing down the storm here in the days ahead. In Vero Beach, Florida, Annie on line 5. Annie, thanks for holding on. You're on the radio. Go ahead.
This is Ann.
Ann, sorry, Ann. I see that now. Yes, Ann, go ahead.
That's all right. I am in my 80s, and I am sheltering in place. I am a Floridian that was raised with hurricanes, so I do not have a concern, and I am aware of their tricky things they can pull on you. But my concern is many of us elderly people, I think the figure is at least 20%, do not have a computer. So when people go on the line and tell you that help is available on your computer at such and such or so and so, they do not give a telephone number. And if they give a telephone number, it's very quickly. And many people are aware of the fact that any telephone number given at any time, which is supposed to be helpful, needs to be repeated.
Yeah. I gotcha, Ann. We should be asking you about hurricane preparation tips. Sounds like you're a veteran.
He's been through them, yeah.
Very calm and comfortable there in Vero Beach, but we're wishing you and your neighbors and family and friends and community all the best.
And let's mention this hotline for Ann. There's a hotline she can call. Our producer Denise is letting folks know. It's called SAIL, the State Assistance Information Line. It's a toll-free hotline. If you need emergency information and you can't get online or watch TV, it's 1-800-342-3557. Let's just get that out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 800-342-3557. Craig Fugate, you've dealt with these challenges of communication at the local level, at the state level, at the national level. Technology has taken over how we communicate, but we also know how vulnerable it is in the aftermath of a storm like this, let alone in the preparation. Your quick thoughts to Ann and others who are who may not be as plugged in as others are.
Ann's absolutely right. And the problem is the people that are plugged in think the Internet's going to survive a hurricane. We saw it go out in Irma. We saw it go out in Michael.
That's right.
The only thing left in many areas of Michael was the local NPR stations. So we tell people it may seem antiquated to people who stream all their news and all their media and think they're smart speakers or
turn
radio,
us on. Turn us on during the storm. That's right. We are always on.
Before, during, and after.
Yes.
Yeah.
The Florida Public Radio Emergency Network.
Yeah.
Yes. And so, Craig, thank you for that.
But apps don't work.
Yes.
Don't work after the storm if there's no internet.
If you can't get your phone to work, your TV's out, your power's out, we will always be there. The Florida Public Radio Emergency Network during this storm and any storm. Keep listening because in a moment we'll find out a little bit more about the diversion of FEMA funds during a hurricane season and how that could affect emergency response here in the state. As we track Dorian, you are listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Keep those calls coming. It's 305-995-1800. How are you planning to ride out the storm? Call us, tweet us at Florida Roundup. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for being with us. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
And I'm Tom Hudson in Miami. People and supplies from the Federal Emergency Management Agency are getting into position here in Florida to deal with the aftermath of Dorian. The storm comes as the Department of Homeland Security will move $155 million from FEMA to border security. Now, Governor Ron DeSantis said on Thursday he does not think that move of money will affect any cash, any financial aid needed after Dorian.
The president assured that we're going to be there for you, for Florida. Some of this money that's being reprogrammed, I think, had been appropriated long ago and was never spent. I don't know the background of that, but I'm confident that it's not going to impact Florida in a negative way.
As we track Hurricane Dorian, the state's emergency preparation, and the role of disaster money, we want your calls. It's 305-995-1800. Tweets to @FloridaRoundup. Now, for more now on the flow of FEMA funds and how the White House is preparing for the storm, we welcome Franco Ordonez, White House correspondent for NPR. Franco, thanks for joining us. You've been reporting that the Trump administration's plans to move some $271 million, more than half of which comes from FEMA disaster relief funds, is going to go now to border security efforts. Democrats in Congress are slamming this move. They're calling it irresponsible, even cruel. So the question I have for you, I guess, is could the disaster relief here in Florida and elsewhere be negatively affected by this big transfer of money?
Well, the Trump administration says no, it will not. The Trump administration says the money for this year's relief is intact. This was taken from prior years. Now, those that I've spoken with said that probably, yes, there will be enough money for this storm. But there are concerns from Democrats and even some former Trump officials who I've spoken to who are worried about later on storms, whether it's next year or even later in the season. I mean, you know, when this money was announced, the moving, it was still Dorian was still a tropical storm. Now we are at Hurricane 4, so that's going to take a lot more resources than expected. So, you know, there is a lot of uncertainty here, and that has got a lot of people concerned.
Franco, it's Tom. Now, our focus obviously is on this hurricane. FEMA, we know, provides emergency management with all kinds of natural disasters, wildfires, tornadoes in the Midwest, earthquakes on the West Coast. Clearly, we're focused on natural disaster and this hurricane. Why did the administration make this decision now? What was there a financial need for this $155 million in order to complete or continue some kind of project?
Yeah, I don't really think the timing could be much worse. You know, the administration seems to be, you know, articulating that, you know, it's more of a coincidence, but that this has been in the works for a while. The Trump administration has been going back and forth with Congress for months now, trying to get more money for border issues. You remember the big fight just a few weeks ago about humanitarian needs money on the border. Now they are saying that there has been a influx of more migrants, particularly single adults, who are filling up detention centers so that they have run out of beds and they need the money to get these beds, which has caused some of the, you know, difficult conditions in these facilities that, you know, that we were hearing about just a few weeks ago. The fact that this storm is going on now, I think, I don't know if I wouldn't say it would have caught them by surprise, but I certainly don't think if they knew this was coming at this time, it would probably have been rolled out a little differently.
Mm-hmm. You know, Franco, Republicans who've been defending the White House's move on this say that this kind of shifting around of funds is not unusual.
Right.
What about that? That historically administrations from both parties have done this kind of thing. Is that true?
It is true. You know, this kind of money is moved around between administrations. The Obama administration did it as well. You know, the Congress has given the president the authority to use certain funds in his discretion to move them around to the priorities that he has. But there is concern about this because not only is the Trump administration, President Trump, pulling from FEMA, he's also, as you noted, pulling from other areas, TSA, from cybersecurity, from Coast Guard. And there is some concern about that maybe there's too much of a focus on immigration at the detriment of other areas. But, you know, this has happened. It has happened in the past, and it'll likely continue to happen. But what is this really, how far is this going to go?
Craig Fugate, former administrator for FEMA, you've been at the meeting. meetings, I imagine, when these things are discussed. What are your thoughts on the timing of this and the amount of money, as well as the rationale that's been provided?
Well, it's certainly a lot of money.
Hold on, Frank. I want to get Craig Fugate in. He's on the phone with us here. Let me just hear his thoughts for a moment. Craig, go ahead.
There's nothing subtle about this administration, and they should have known they were going into peak hurricane season. But what they're doing will not affect the response to Dorian. The big problem is it's going to affect all of the open disasters. FEMA will have to watch their balances very closely. If Dorian requires a lot of funds, they're going to have to make decisions about stopping work on older disasters.
May that include Hurricane Michael?
Yes. They'll go into what they call immediate needs funding if they need a lot more resources for response to Dorian. And then the administration's gamble, which has been pretty much everybody does this, is that Congress will fund the money back for disasters. So this goes back to the original authority that Homeland Security had when it was created to transfer these dollars. And quite honestly, if Congress doesn't like it, they should take that transfer authority away from these disaster funds.
Wow. It's 305-995-1800 as we discuss the path of Hurricane Dorian here for the full hour on the Florida Roundup. Getting lots of tweets from listeners wanting to know, will I have to evacuate? What are your predictions for my city? We encourage everyone to listen to public radio and the Florida Public Radio Emergency Network and tweets coming from Florida storms. The path of the storm as of right now is to enter the state in southeast Florida and track up the state. Whether it will veer to the western side of the state or the eastern side of the state, we're still waiting to find out. But John Kennedy of Gatehouse Media, what about this? As Tom just learned from our other guests, depending on whether the FEMA money is depleted from this storm or future storms, that could affect the ongoing recovery, particularly in the Panhandle, where people are still, many of them, struggling after Hurricane Michael. It really is all of this coming at the worst possible time for a state that has been challenged severely in recent years with dealing with severe storms. You know, and at the same time, in September, there's going to be a big push all over the world about climate action, getting serious about our warming planet. We're right in the middle of this here in Florida. It's certainly growing more challenging for not just emergency response folks, but the whole state apparatus that you cover in dealing with the fallout from all of this.
That's very true. Governor DeSantis very recently appointed a sort of a climate change czar part of his administration. It was, hailed by a lot of environmental people and, people across government generally that this new appointee will be somebody that will help coordinate what is expected to be the state's response. However, so far, based on history, we have not seen the state respond very well to changing climate changes and the impact of development in the state on the environment. So really don't know what kind of authority this new appointee will have within the administration. But it seems to be something that, especially in South Florida, communities there have tried to stand up because it is a taxpayer issue, because taxpayers are paying to sort of fortify and retrofit city infrastructure that has been damaged or is clearly overwhelmed by water intrusion, saltwater intrusion.
John, let me ask you, when you hear Craig Fugate, the former FEMA administrator, say that this financial transfer of money that has happened from FEMA into DHS and border security could impact FEMA funding previous disasters that it's still paying for, including Hurricane Michael,
Hurricane Michael.
You hear that? Yeah, how do you hear that from the state? And is, when the governor tries to reassure the state that, yes, FEMA will be there, what about the money in several weeks, several months' time?
Yeah, to a great extent, the state has been relying on federal money for recovery in Michael. The state did put, quite a bit of cash toward a host of, redevelopment issues across the central panhandle. But again, it always turns back to, well, you know, we're waiting on money from FEMA. And not getting money from FEMA was a big delay in getting anything going in that region after the storm last October. So, FEMA's the handout that the state of Florida is always relying on. So if there's any trouble with that, it's a big problem.
And Franco, President Trump canceled a trip to Poland so that he could stay here stateside as Dorian comes into Florida. As everybody here in Florida is preparing, perhaps thinking about evacuating, how this storm is affecting the White House politically is something that you're also tracking, particularly in light of the revelations about how FEMA money is being spent, correct?
Absolutely. I mean, obviously, you know, depending on the recovery efforts needed in Florida following, you know, following impact and the recovery that is needed, this pulling of the money is no question could have political impacts. I don't need to tell your listeners how important Florida is for the president's reelection quest. This is a very big deal, and as you have seen this morning, he signed a new declaration, emergency declaration, to help with the effort. And, you know, he's been in contact with Marco Rubio and Senator Scott. So there's no question he's going to be following it. He's actually leaving later today to watch this from Camp David. He'll be there through at least the beginning of the weekend watching the tracking. But I expect he could come back when upon landfall.
Well, we so appreciate your insights from Washington. Thanks for joining the Florida Roundup. He's Franco Ordonez, White House correspondent for NPR. Thanks, Franco.
Thank you.
And this is the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio.
Your phone calls at 305-995-1800. Your questions, your concerns, your comments at Florida Roundup on Twitter. John Kennedy, who is a State House reporter for Gatehouse Media, with us from our sister station in Tallahassee, WFSU. Craig Fugate is on the phone with us. Craig used to be the administrator for the Federal Emergency Management Agency. He knows Florida and emergencies very well. He's joining us from his home in Central Florida. We want to go to the Intercoastal Waterway. Mark is on a cell phone on line 5. Go ahead, Mark. You're on the radio.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. No, I just wanted to relate that my family and I were cruising in the Jacksonville area when we found out about the hurricane's track. As you guys remember, at that time, it was aiming right for Jacksonville, so we kind of sat down, ran the numbers and probabilities, and decided to head towards Savannah. So we're currently on the Intercoastal Waterway, crossing the Georgia marshes, and hopefully we'll be safe in Savannah sometime this evening or tomorrow morning.
Oh, my goodness. Stay safe.
You're gonna tie up and get off the boat, or you're gonna shelter on the boat?
Oh, if any hurricane or even, you know, tropical storm force winds reach anywhere near us, we're most definitely going to tie up and get off. If it keeps in the current track, we'll probably just keep going north or into the river, depending what the conditions are. But yeah, we're not the ride it out on the boat mentality.
I don't blame you.
Good to
you.
Know, Mark. Yeah, no. I think far from a boat is where you would find me in this regard. We appreciate you sharing your story with us, Mark. Thanks so
Ryan
much.
Ryan is Take on care, the guys. Line. Thank you. Ryan, do we have Ryan on the line? No.
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, you're still there. Okay, go ahead, Ryan.
Hi there. I'm a retail manager in Fort Lauderdale, and I just kind of wanted to express, you know, be kind to your retail employees. We are trying so hard. My team is working overtime, just try and get like water filled, peanut butter and jelly, just to get guests what they need. So I understand that it's frustrating, like the quantity limits on water. We're sold out of a lot of stuff, but we are trying our very hardest, both at a store level and at the distribution center. So just try and have a little bit of empathy.
Absolutely.
I know a lot of our guests.
Yeah.
A lot of our guests have been understanding.
And, you know, people always go out and buy water, don't they? And you guys run out. And so, yes, we need to be patient and kind with each other because some stores are rationing the water now, aren't they, Ryan?
Yeah. All Target stores in South Florida are limiting it to 2 cases per guest. Your best bet is going to be to show up like right at 8 a.m. because Target stores unload between 4 and 6 a.m. So your very best bet for water is going to be to show up right at store open.
Good plan. Good tip. Thanks, Ryan, for that.
You know, I gotta for Craig and for John, you know, for years, I recall the guidance was 3 days of water and food. And did I miss the notice that that has now increased to 5 days? And in some cases, FEMA, Craig, is now talking 7 days of provisions.
Yeah, I kind of go back to the Hitchhiker Guide to the Galaxy when they asked what's the meaning of life, and they said 47. how much stuff you need to stock really depends upon where you are. If I'm in a rural area and I lose power and I lose my private well and I wouldn't have water otherwise, I'd store more. If I'm in a more urban area where things tend to come back quicker, I'd probably store less. But the thing I'm probably not going to go do is go buy a lot of water. I'll buy a few. I'll buy a case or two because we'll just consume it anyway. But you can store water, and one of the easiest sure. ways to store water is just empty containers or Ziploc bags and freeze them so yeah. you have cold water if the power's out.
And what about the old tip to fill up the bathtub and then put just a pinprick of bleach in it for extra water? Do you, as former FEMA head, FEMA administrator, is that a good tip?
I mean, bathtubs, trash cans, whatever. Again, you got two types of water you're going to want. You want potable water you're going to drink. You want to make sure that's in clean containers, and you know, again, that's probably less the bathtub route, more the container or Ziploc bag route. But the bathtub, trash can stuff can then be used to help flush toilets, bathe, and do other things. But, you know, your tap water is perfectly fine right now. I don't know why people aren't taking advantage of that.
I know.
And it avoids so true. Having the wait in line.
Yeah,
you know, it's funny. That's one of the messages that some of the elected officials here in South Florida have been harping on over the past day or so, as we see on social media. You know, the videos and the photos of empty shelves of water, and that contrasted with somebody's kitchen faucet running just fine and with clean,
it's amazing,
clean and drinkable potable water. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 305-995-1800. Lots of your phone calls. Craig Fugate along with us, former FEMA administrator. John Kennedy also watching the state response for Gatehouse Media with us from Tallahassee. 305-995-1800. You're listening to the Florida Roundup. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks again for listening. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. As we spend the full hour this Friday lunch hour bringing folks up to date on the path of Hurricane Dorian, which is headed toward the southeastern Florida coast. A quick plug for the Florida Public Radio Emergency Network and Florida Storms. Just tune to public radio wherever you are in the state, and you will have consistent updates on the path of Dorian. If you lose power, you can always still turn us on and get that vital information. We'll go back to your calls in a moment at 305-995-1800. First, though, here is a tweet from State Rep. Anna Escamani, Central Florida representative. She tweets the Florida Roundup, "We want to give you a reminder that we've refiled our 100% renewable energy goals bill to help curb extreme weather patterns via climate change and protect our state for generations to come." John Kennedy, our State House reporter, with us for the hour. What about that? We've got a state rep listening to the show trying to remind everybody that there are efforts in Tallahassee to deal with the effects of climate change and extreme weather that Florida keeps getting hammered with. What about that?
Well, those bills go nowhere in the Republican legislature, and I think it's unlikely that, you know, that effort will get very far again in once the legislature reconvenes in January for the 2020 session. But Democrats keep, you know, swinging at every pitch when it comes to trying to get this issue before voters. It's very similar to what you've heard in Congress with, you know, the Green New Deal. But it receives a similar, you know, attention from the Republican-controlled legislature in Tallahassee.
And as
John Kennedy.
Go ahead, Tom.
Quick question around regarding this particular storm. What can you tell us? What has the governor's office communicated around staging of supplies? And what should folks know about those expectations?
Well, they're getting ready. I mean, they have in Orlando area, they have food and water, vast amounts of it that are ready to be distributed to surrounding areas. This is the role of the National Guard to a great extent. There are efforts to get boats in, for recovery and also for evacuation, any kind of assistance they may need in urban areas that become flooded. It's a wide array of things that they are getting in place right now. So I think the state is going to be well deployed, once that comes along. It's funny, when we were speaking earlier about water shortages, one thing that's kind of new in this language of this storm, we've heard Governor DeSantis talking about, have 7 days supply
right.
of food, medicine, yeah. and water. And another thing that he's saying is if your stores are running out of water, Amazon is still running. So the idea that, you can have it delivered. So, call out for that bottle of water and
right.
have a truck come along. So, that shows how far away we've gone from, I guess, the idea of, fill up a bottle with from your tap.
Here's a tweet from a listener. Someone just tweeted the Florida Roundup. Your best bet for water is the tap in your kitchen sink. Thank you for that reminder. Here's another tweet. I'm a 21-year-old delivery driver, and I'm storm prepping for the first time. I'm alarmed to see how quickly resources can disappear. In a state of emergency, I had to drive miles to find gas, he says. All right, let's go to Amy in Tampa. Hi, Amy. Go ahead.
Hi there. Love the show and love all these tips for preparing. One of the things, I work in disaster recovery, and one of the things I learned post-Irma is that you really need to follow the CDC requirements for sanitizing your containers before you store tap water.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, bacteria, unsafe levels of bacteria can grow, and even, your water bottle that you leave, if your air conditioning's out, all of that, people can get very sick. And the last thing you want to do is get very sick in a home that the toilet's barely flushed
yes.
in after a storm. So just to all of your listeners, that to sanitize those containers first with bleach. If you go on the CDC's website, they have all the walkthroughs for how to do that.
Oh, Amy, thanks for that reminder. Craig Fugate, formerly of FEMA. It is important not to panic. Take a few concrete steps like the one Amy just pointed out to keep things in your property, your home, or your business as clean and well-protected as possible. That was a good tip from her. What else can you share with listeners? As they're trying to calmly prepare?
Well, again, if you got boats in the water and you're going to move them, now's the time to move them. You don't want to wait too late for that. Getting ready to evacuate if you have to evacuate, know where you're going. Make sure you got a plan, with your pets. You don't want to leave them behind. Some of the things when you're stocking up on your supplies you don't immediately think of, but right after the storm hits is having heavy-duty trash bags, extra bleach for sanitation, cleanup stuff. It's not uncommon to lose water and water pressure. Our lovely trees have one bad habit, particularly for you guys up in Jacksonville, I'm in Gainesville, is they wrap their roots around the water line. So if they get blown over, not uncommon to have water and sewer lines break or low water pressure. So that's why we tell people to store water, not necessarily have to go buy water, but you need to make sure the water is safe. And because you may be not able to use your sink or dishwasher, you want to be able to make sure anything you're eating and cooking on, you can keep clean and safe until you get everything back to normal.
Yeah.
Let's remind folks that you are listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. 305-995-1800 or at Florida Roundup. Some questions and concerns around electricity. That was one of the big takeaways from Hurricane Wilma here in South Florida back in 2005 and all across the state just in 2017 because of Irma. John Kennedy with Gatehouse Media in Tallahassee covering the governor and the governor's preparations. What's the governor's office telling you about preparations for the power companies, especially along the eastern seaboard of Florida, as that in the peninsula entirely is in the cone of uncertainty?
Yeah, well, he's been in contact with FP&L, Florida Power and Light, which is the largest provider in Florida, and he seems to be feeling pretty confident about what they're ready to do and the kind of staging that they have in place or in progress right now. He's also going to go tour today the FP&L's facility up in Juneau Beach, where they have sort of a a bunker like setting where they can work through storms. So I think there's a feeling that there are assistance there. There's always a question, there's a conflict between these big investor-owned utilities and the municipal companies that serve, many communities across the state. There's a clear rivalry between them, where the big guys want to have a little bit more influence over the power restoration effort. But these munis also do need a lot of help when it comes to getting linemen into the community and bringing people back. So things work fairly cooperatively, but there's sometimes a little bit of an edge, it seems like, between the sides as they're forced together to work.
Sure. Let's take one more call this hour. It's Jerry in Lake Wales, Florida. Hi, Jerry. How are you? Go ahead.
Okay. You mentioned electricity, and a lot of people are on septic tanks, so their toilets won't flush if the electricity goes out. And then for people that don't have that problem, I'm wondering, in case of flooding, how would their toilets operate?
Okay, thanks for that question. These are some of the types of issues that come up at these moments, Craig Fugate. What about Jerry's question?
Well, again, it's really very location dependent. If that's why you notice a lot of the new septic tanks that are put in actually look like Indian burial mounds for areas that are low lying. But it's going to be a problem where you have a lot of standing water and flooding. Toilets may not work as well. And that's one of the things, again, local officials, particularly local county public health departments, will really be focusing on if we do see a lot of flooding.
Let's squeeze in one more quick phone call here in Hollandale Beach in South Florida. Osvaldo, go ahead. We've got just a couple of seconds here.
Okay, good afternoon. Thank you very much for letting me in. I just would like to tell John Kennedy to put some pressure on the governor. Today you read the news that 60% of the assisted living, they haven't even complied with the order of generator.
Osvaldo's right. So this is a concern that nursing homes in Florida may not have the emergency backup power in place that's been required since Hurricane Irma.
And also to put pressure on the government and on the smaller grocery stores and everything else to provide with, after what happened with Andrew, now most of the gas stations, they have their own powers, and Publix and Winn-Dixie's and so on. But what about the small Sedanos and Presidente and everything else?
Well, I'm not sure that it's necessarily John's position to put pressure on the companies necessarily, but
he can report on it. How about that?
Yeah, he can certainly report on it. Yeah. First of all, we just got a minute left here, but what about this nursing home question? This was with deadly consequences that we saw in Hurricane Irma.
Yes, this was after the Hollywood nursing home lost power and air conditioning, and so many residents died in after Irma hit in 2017. The legislature required nursing homes to have equipment that can either back up generators or power sources for air conditioning. And of course, they've given them slack. They keep postponing the deadline for these nursing homes to be fully compliant. So right now it's estimated that maybe about 60% of the nursing homes across the state have not installed the equipment according to these new regulations. So DeSantis today was talking about, there's a website, the state's agency for healthcare administration. You can check locally to see, whether or not the nursing homes that you're concerned about are meeting this backup power requirement.
John Kennedy with Gatehouse Media in Tallahassee. Hopefully you'll have a nice, calm weekend in the Panhandle, John.
Let's hope
that. The Panhandle could certainly see some heavy weather, no doubt about it, so obviously stay tuned.
For sure.
And Craig Fugate, former administrator with the Federal Emergency Management Agency. Craig, always appreciate your time and expertise. Thanks for sharing it with us.
Thanks, everyone. This is the Florida Roundup. Again, a plug. The Florida Public Radio Emergency Network and Florida Storms. Keep your radio on during this storm all across the state. We'll always be on, and you can get up-to-the-minute information. It's a vital network. I'm Melissa Ross.
And I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for calling. Thanks for listening. Sorry we couldn't get to all those phone calls, but stay tuned to your Florida Public Radio for the latest information regarding the hurricane. Thanks so much.